Superhuman eyes. Accelerated evolution.
In the landscape of American healthcare, the term itself is somewhat of a misnomer. It's more accurately described as a system geared towards managing diseases rather than creating health. Today's guest was so profoundly disenchanted with this reactive approach, he took things into his own hands. Dr. Darshan Shah, a figure whose name has become synonymous with innovation and wellness and medical technology, is the founder and CEO of Next Health, a company that aims to shift the focus to a proactive, health-centric model of care. Dr. Shah has harnessed his vast experience from performing over 10,000 surgeries to advising countless patients on wellness strategies to redefine the landscape of healthcare. His academic achievements include degrees and training from the University of Missouri, Kansas City, Mayo Clinic, Harvard Business School, and Singularity University. His vision for a future where healthcare transcends traditional boundaries, focusing on prevention and optimization, sets him apart from many of his academic peers. Dr. Shah is an experienced medical doctor as well as incredibly successful entrepreneur who believes in leveraging technology, personalized medicine, and holistic approaches to empower individuals towards achieving their peak health potential. He is a true leader whose work at the intersection of health and technology is crafting a new paradigm for wellness and longevity. Darshan Shah, welcome to the Superhumanized Podcast. What a pleasure to connect with you.
Oh, thank you. So happy to be here, Ariana. This is a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Likewise, I have long been waiting for the opportunity to talk to you, to pick your brain. You are a recognized authority in health and wellness. You are a surgeon. You are an entrepreneur. You're changing the landscape in healthcare. You're the founder of Next Health, which is a really incredible company and preventative healthcare provider. Your focus on extending health span, lifespan, all the things that I hold very near and dear to my heart. And I'd love for you to give us give us an introduction to Next Health. What is this? What is it about? I already know and I love it. I'd love for our audience to learn about it too.
Thank you so much for coming in to Next Health and checking it out. A little bit about my story, I think, would be helpful. I was trained in traditional Western medicine. I'm an MD from a United States medical school. I graduated from medical school when I was 21. I started my career as a surgeon, and I learned everything in depth about Western medicine. I can diagnose disease and treat disease with a pill or a surgery very effectively. And I did that for 20 years. I was a surgeon, and I worked in the ICU. I worked in trauma, emergency room, reconstructive surgery, all of it. And what I found throughout that process was, as expert as I was at taking care of sick individuals that were either close to death or headed that direction, really there were no tools in Western medicine for optimizing health. So I always say Next Health is the place for the 85% of us that are not super sick right now. You know what I mean? So the people that go to their doctor, the doctor looks at some minimal blood work and says, you're fine. Why are you even here? You don't need to come and see me. Or for the people that are just looking for more, they know there's more out there. They know that just not having a disease is not health. Health is absolutely not having a disease, but it's also feeling incredible, feeling vital, looking at the mirror and liking what you see back to you and just being happy in your body and in your mind and in your soul. And so there wasn't really a place like that. There wasn't a clinic from the medical side of things that could help me achieve my personal health and wellness goals. And so I decided 10 years ago to completely change my career because I was also struggling from health issues myself. And I just wanted to have a place where you can go see the doctor, but it was more health focused, and also have all the latest technology that I was using to optimize my health all under one roof. And so Next Health is, we call it a health optimization and longevity center. And we started in Los Angeles, where you and I both are. And from there, we've grown to New York and we're also in Hawaii, believe it or not. And then we are going to be soon all over the world. We're opening Dubai soon, Canada, Australia, and all over the United States, Miami, Nashville, and a few other locations as well.
Yeah, and you're actually being humble, Darshan. You have 6 locations now. You are poised to have over 50 new locations in the next few years, right? That's incredible.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. And you know what I really love about that is more than just a successful business and things are growing, but really I want Nextel to be a platform that people could always go to whenever they hear about something new or they want to experience what's the latest and greatest in health optimization and longevity. We will vet everything and we will make sure that we only bring on technology that is safe and effective. And by having kind of a big geographic footprint, more people could access these technologies where, you know, as we're lucky living in Los Angeles, we have a lot here, but most places in the country don't have access to some of these things, and they should.
Absolutely. And especially considering that I've had the pleasure and the privilege of talking to really incredible scientists who in their labs right now are experiencing, and they know what's possible, what the broader public will get to know about maybe in the next 5 to 10 years. And several of them have very clearly communicated to me, some also on the podcast, actually, that, yeah, to live up to 150 years is not science fiction anymore. Sure, you could get run over by a truck. You could have, I don't know, maybe get a horrible infection or something awful happens. But let's think positive. So if you take good care of yourself with the advances in technology and preventative medicine, all the good stuff, it's very feasible that you and I, people who are listening to this podcast, we could live up to 150. This means we're not going to only outlive our parents by a few years. This is evolutionary, revolutionary. We have the potential to live so much longer. It's going to change society as we know it. And so we need the knowledge and the tools to help us navigate this transitory period in human history as well as possible. I already, in preparation for this conversation, Darshan, oh my God, there's so many amazing things I can talk about to Dr. Shah. You are so well-rounded, so knowledgeable. And I definitely want to talk about some of the fundamentals. And I also want to go all the way out there to the most exciting things on the horizon. And also the most exciting things you're already deploying in your practice, because there is so much stuff to be excited and really happy about. But how about we start with some of the basics? Let's say something like nutrition. This is one of the fundamental pillars of really being in a state of radiant health, right? You take care of that. There's so many conflicting narratives surrounding diet and nutrition. From one side, you hear this. From the other side, you hear that. All the kinds of fads, all kinds of experts and biohackers and doctors telling you one thing or the other. How do you personally and how do you at Next Health navigate these complexities to actually offer evidence-based nutritional advice tailored to the individual needs?
Yeah, that's such a great question, Ariana. And just to double-click on what you said about bringing it back to the basics, there is so much coming out. But I think the basics are more critical now to focus on than ever before. Because number one, if you don't have the basics right, all of the longevity technology, all the new things that are coming out are not going to be as effective on you, or they might have no effect on you. If you're applying these technologies to a body that's inflamed, that is in metabolic disease states, et cetera, a lot of these technologies won't have the desired effect. So it is critical to get the basics right. Secondly, like you mentioned, there's a lot of new incredible things coming out there, but it's going to take some time to come out. But it's important that we live long enough to see that happen. If you don't have the basics, you are going to still get chronic disease and you might pass away before you have the access to these technologies. To get the basics right, when I sit down with a patient, we focus on a couple of different things. One is the Pareto principle. People get paralysis by overanalysis, because there are thousands of people on Instagram, on blogs, on podcasts talking about everything from like little minuscule compounds in foods. They're saying some of them are bad and some of them are good. And people get so lost in the weeds of this, of all of this information, that they forget to zoom out. And when you zoom out, there really is 20% of the information that will give you 80% of the result. So what is that with nutrition? It is cutting out all of the ultra-processed garbage that is in our day-to-day society. Now, I think most people in your audience know, don't buy a box of food that's meant to last forever. It has ingredients that you can't even pronounce. on the ingredient list. But it goes way beyond that. When you go to a restaurant, most restaurants are buying processed, ultra-processed food to bake the food that they give you. So if you're not choosing your restaurants correctly, if you're not choosing your oils correctly, if you're not doing a little bit of deeper dive when you go out to eat, it's asking, what do you use to cook that in? Then you're still exposing yourself to ultra-processed food. And this is basically food combined with chemicals, which are poisonous to our genetics, poisonous to our immune system, poisonous to our brain directly and to our mitochondria directly. And cutting that out is your number one task that you want to do when you're focused on nutrition. After that, I tell people, I almost don't care what you eat. You can eat a carnivore diet. You can eat a vegan diet. You can eat anything in between. And there's going to be a very good chance that you're going to be a lot healthier than you were before. Now, the second part of this you mentioned is personalization. How do we know what directionality that you need in your diet? So this is where we do some testing. And some of the testing is blood tests, some is genetic testing. And then we use devices and technology that's available now that is game-changing, such as continuous glucose monitors, mm-hmm. to help really personalize dietary choices for people. And more than that, just to show people their reactions to certain type of foods. And so by using technologies like the continuous glucose monitor, we can show people that, for example, I might be able to eat a banana and have no glucose spike, whereas you might have a banana and have a massive glucose spike. So you should avoid those foods that cause these massive glucose spikes in your diet. For example, another test that we do is food sensitivity testing and a gluten testing, dairy testing. Look, some people can have gluten and dairy without any issues, but many people have a sensitivity to either one or both of those items. And to know that can really be healing for your microbiome in your gut. So that's how we take the technology one step further on the nutrition aspect. Once you have, we don't even do the testing if you're just going to go to McDonald's right after the test and eat processed burgers. It's not worth it. So you have to get that part done first.
Absolutely. And talking about processed foods, it's so easy to also fall into the traps. So many of us know it. You're busy, you're stressed, you're running around, you're traveling, and you're trying to make it as easy as possible. And then I've been guilty of it. I reached to the, I don't know, some protein bar, right? It's tasty. Most of them are actually real garbage. They're highly processed. The stuff that's put in them, from seed oils to Lord knows what else to make them tasty and make your brain crave more of them and make you feel full. It's not good for you. Now, will you survive if you do that once in a while when you're very stressed? Yes, I will categorize that under that makes me stronger. But if it's something regular, it's simply not good. And to go back to the basics, to really as much whole foods as you possibly can, stay away from, like you said, make sure you also research where you go to eat, where you go to nourish what I consider my body temple. I've been so blessed with this. I'm going to take the best care of it. I'm not going to put, I don't know, canola oil into a Ferrari to fuel it. That's ridiculous. Yeah. And speaking about canola oil, that's something you'd really want to avoid. Most restaurants will use this or something else that's actually not really beneficial. So I love the personalized approach you take, Darshan, and that's really also where the future is. I'm curious to know, so the GI, of course, is the health of our GI is foundational. So many things come from there, whether it's our immunity, whether it's hormone balance, whether it's mental health. I'm curious, with regard to your approach to mental well-being and balance, mental health, do you have certain protocols in place that you deploy for the people who work with you on their health?
Yes, that's such a great question. And so mental health is a huge part of overall health. The brain and body are intimately connected. We know this, that what goes on in the brain can make you sick in your gut, and what goes on in your gut can make you sick in your brain. There's this gut-brain connection, there's a gut-heart connection, there's a gut-lung connection. It's absolutely true. So if you have, it goes in both ways also in how you think about how you optimize your brain health and your mental health. So one thing to consider is that if your gut health is off, most of the serotonin in our body, 90% of it comes from our gut. If your gut is not happy, your brain is not going to be happy. I've seen so many people resolve anxiety, attention deficit, just by fixing their gut health. And so getting that optimized is a really good area to actually look into. The other thing I always say is people that are struggling with attention deficit, depression, et cetera, it's always good to see what's going on in the body. There's a lot of hormonal issues that can affect mental health as well. And not knowing where your hormones are at, not knowing where your inflammatory status is at, how much inflammation you have, that definitely affects your mental health and your brain health. Once again, we do a full biomarker panel on people so we can tease out what's potentially affecting someone's mental health.
Great. And I was just talking about hormones. I had a conversation with Dr. Jennifer Garrison from the Garrison Lab. She does fantastic work really around her mission is to eradicate menopause because she says there's just such an inequity. Men also go through something called andropause. So maybe that's the time when men buy the smart car and exchange their partners, what's called midlife crisis. But joking aside, this transition in life hits women much harder mentally and physically, emotionally, than it does men. I know you also have protocols in place for regulating hormones, hormone replacement therapy, which is fantastic. I think everybody who so desires should have access to it, women in particular. We've had 20 years ago, I think, these erroneous study come out which correlated cancer with bioidentical hormone replacement or hormone replacement in general. It was not the bioidentical, and which then scared people off it, where now there's tons of research, tons of new knowledge that says, no, that's not the case. How do you actually go about assessing and then optimizing somebody's hormonal health?
Yeah, the study that you mentioned was a Women's Health Initiative, and it's been such a negative impact on our society since that study came out, because as you mentioned, there were many erroneous conclusions that were drawn from that study. Secondly, it was done with chemical hormones made and also hormones made from, and these are not bioidentical hormones, and the conclusions were also misguided. And so the media latched onto this story, demonized hormone replacement therapy for a long time. And we spend a lot of time re-educating our patients, both men and women, because another thing that happened was the association of testosterone therapy to prostate cancer, whereas testosterone therapy actually protects men from prostate cancer, doesn't cause it to occur. It can feed a receptor positive one, so we're always checking for it, but it can actually protect you from cancer. So both of these kind of these headwinds that we had over the last few decades on hormone replacement therapy are difficult, and we talk to patients about it. But really, what we tell people now is, look, here's a pile of studies to show that hormone replacement therapy is not only safe, but it will protect you from all forms of chronic disease, Alzheimer's, neurodegenerative disease, heart attacks, and cancer.
Osteoporosis for women.
Exactly. So both men and women should highly consider hormone replacement therapy after their 40s and 50s, especially if they're symptomatic or especially if we see, for example, osteoporosis on their scans. So we have hormone replacement therapy protocols. There's a lot of different ways to do hormone replacement therapy. You have creams that you can use that are compounded with bioidentical hormones. There's also hormone injections. And finally, there's also pellet therapy, which we also use, which is very effective. So we have different options for people. And look, we don't try to push hormone therapy on everyone because everyone doesn't need it. But there are certain people that we know would certainly benefit, especially people that are struggling with the symptoms of it. And a lot of men and women struggle with the symptoms needlessly for years.
100%, Darshan. And this goes for mental and emotional health to physical health. I myself am a huge fan of bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. I find it's not only dealing with things that you may, the one aspect of a lot of these things is, of course, healing or taking care of symptoms. The other is truly optimizing. How do you function your best mentally, cognitively? How do you function best physically? How do you feel best? And we have these tools at our disposal, and it's phenomenal. And a lot of these tools also have undergone a democratization. For instance, your health insurance will actually pay for a lot of these things now, where they may have not been accessible many years ago. A lot of the things that right now might be cost prohibitive for many individuals, I believe this democratization is also going to take place. There's going to become, we're going to have more access to this. The pellets I find interesting. Can you explain that? That is subcutaneous, right?
Yes, exactly. So the pellets involve a small procedure where we numb a small area of skin, usually in the buttocks or sometimes the abdomen, and we make a tiny incision and put a pellet underneath your skin. It's so tiny, you don't even need a suture to stitch it up. But what's really great about that procedure is that, number one, it gives you a steady flow of hormone release over the next 3 to 6 months. And secondly, you don't have to go through the injections every other day or every third day. You don't have to monitor creams, et cetera. So it's just very much more convenient. And also that steady stream of hormone replacement is great for both men and women. So you don't go like the up and down swings of cyclical hormone therapy.
And talking about testosterone, there's a big misconception. A lot of women that I talk to don't realize that this is actually also very beneficial for women. We also have testosterone at much lower level than men. A lack of testosterone can result in even apathy or just not having drive, where if you have the right levels of testosterone, not too much, of course, but just the right amount, you have this, yes, I can, yes, I will, yes, I'm going, and just this zest for life. And a lot of women, especially as they approach their 50s, may experience this as a side effect of the shift in hormones, where they lose this. So to just know that it's out there, to know that you do not have to stay in a certain state, you can change your state mentally, spiritually, and physically with these tools is incredible. You just mentioned it as well. A lot of the diseases that can be just weeded out by, for example, hormone therapy. If we talk about neurodegenerative diseases, they represent not only a significant challenge to longevity, but a significant challenge to society. If you look at the skyrocketing rates of whether it's Alzheimer's, whether it's other dementia, things like Parkinson's, my father has been dealing with Parkinson's for 15 years now. So it hits close to home. What approaches do you personally take and also professionally to support brain health and cognitive function as we age?
Yeah. So like you said, we are definitely seeing an uptick in all sorts of neurodegenerative diseases. And it's very concerning, actually. And I think we have to look at neurodegenerative diseases as also a part of a holistic strategy. All of these diseases are very susceptible to things like metabolic dysfunction, so having high insulin levels, glucose spikes. They're all very susceptible to mold toxicity, to heavy metal toxicity. They're all very susceptible to lack of sleep, all very susceptible to hormonal deficiencies. So it really has to be an entire whole body strategy, focusing on the root causes of why we're having these problems and treating them from the ground up. Specifically in regards to neurodegenerative disease and brain health, especially when someone starts experiencing cognitive impairment, we do have some advanced technology now to really help move the needle. And it starts with both diagnostics. So previously, it's been really difficult to potentially diagnose Alzheimer's disease. You'd have to get a specialized scan. Even that was sometimes difficult to read. It's high radiation. And most doctors wouldn't order that scan unless there was a real concern. Now we have blood tests to actually find the proteins, tau protein, amyloid protein in your blood. These recently came out over the last year. They show a high correlation to the scans, the PET scans that we do. And I think this is going to be a game changer, because once you have this level and you know that you're headed towards a disease, just like hemoglobin A1C with diabetes, for example, you can start taking actions to turn around the tide of what's happening and at least do a dive into why this is happening. Secondly, I think people need to know, just because you have a genetic mutation that puts you at risk for Alzheimer's, it's very rare that it's actually going to happen. It's not deterministic. It can be turned around. So just because you have APOE4 doesn't mean you're definitely going to get Alzheimer's. You do have to be more aggressive in preventing it. Lastly, we have a new therapy called therapeutic plasma exchange. And therapeutic plasma exchange is, once again, a technology that's been around forever, decades, but locked up in the hospitals to treat people that are inpatient for autoimmune crisis and for a few other things that can sometimes land someone in the ICU. However, when we do total plasma exchange, what we're removing is all the plasma from someone's blood. And when you remove the plasma, you're removing these proteins, you're removing these cytokines, you're removing the inflammatory factors that lead to further neurodegeneration. And when you do that, it's been shown in a few studies now to actually slow the rate of progression. So that's another new tool that we have in our toolbox that we're actually doing at Next Health as well. And by the way, that same technology is very beneficial for heavy metal toxicity, mold, many other long COVID, many other diagnoses.
That's really exciting, Darshan. I know so many people who are dealing with lingering symptoms of COVID. It can be, I don't even want to call it mild because that doesn't do it justice to what these individuals are experiencing. But from quote, let's say on a lower part of the scale, my memory has just gone really bad ever since I had COVID 2 years ago. I just had a dinner with a dear friend and her husband yesterday. And he's, my memory, I had COVID 2 years ago. It's just really not what it was anymore. And I also have friends, people I'm really close to, who are dealing with severe symptoms that have been attributed to long COVID, or it gets lumped in with chronic fatigue, or when doctors just don't know what to do with a whole host of symptoms. And so they use these umbrella terms. So tell me more about this plasma exchange. Do you already offer it? And if so, what happens once I go into Next Health? How does that look like?
Yeah, we do offer it at Next Health. And what you do is you come in, we just sit you down in one of our treatment chairs, and we put an IV, one in each arm. Mm-hmm. One IV is used to remove your blood and feed it into the plasma exchange apheresis machine. And the other IV goes back into another arm and it gives you back your blood cells. And what this machine does, it physically separates the plasma from your blood cells. And so the blood cells, your red blood cells, your white blood cells, we put them back inside of you because obviously you need them. But the plasma has a lot of these negative deleterious products in it that is removed. We're not doing total plasma exchange on everyone just yet because the more you remove, the more side effects you can have. So we keep it to 2 liters. But with 2 liters of plasma removal, you get significant, you're significantly moving the needle on the treatment aspects of this. The whole treatment takes about 3 to 4 hours. You're in the machine for actually 2 to 3 hours, and it's very comfortable. You don't feel faint or anything because the actual amount of blood that's actually outside of your body at any one time is about 250 cc's. It feels pretty comfortable once we get the IVs in, and in 2 or 3 hours, you're done.
Tell me about the potential side effects. So what should people be prepared for potentially?
Okay, so when you're removing the plasma, there's also some factors in the plasma that are positive that you need. Some of those are called coagulation factors, right? And so this is what helps your blood coagulate in case you get an injury. So 24 hours after a plasma exchange, we want to make sure that you are very careful, that you don't get bruised or you knock yourself. That's one potential side effect. Other than that, there's very few real side effects of this procedure. It's really pretty safe. It's, like I said, it's been FDA approved and used in hospitals for decades.
Wonderful. And any contraindications, people with certain health issues who should maybe not do this, or is it?
We don't do it on people that have congestive heart failure. There's a few disease symptoms that we really are careful about doing it in, but those are exceedingly rare. Most people are good candidates for this.
This is fascinating. And so how many of these sessions would you recommend to somebody who's really showing severe symptoms of whatever it is, let's call it long COVID, or who has severe inflammation, all kinds of stuff going on? How many sessions would you recommend?
So most of the protocols recommend 6 sessions, 1 week apart. If we're doing it for something that we're trying to reverse, like severe symptoms of long COVID, or if, for example, an autoimmune crisis, et cetera. However, a lot of our patients are also doing it for longevity. There's a lot of research coming out about how this actually factors in, improves all of the markers of longevity. And so those people are doing it either once a month or once a quarter.
I'm really fascinated by this. And I know I'm not the only one who has this question. What is the cost of a session?
So right now the cost is about $8,000, but we do have them in packages because a lot of people do 6 treatments. And I think with time, these costs are going to come down for sure. I can see today when this could probably be even just a couple $1,000s, and people will do this on a more regular basis.
Fantastic. And can you share some success stories just so people get a taste of what's possible?
Yeah, I can definitely say that we have 2 or 3 patients that we've used this for long COVID symptomatology, and they've been very happy with the results, getting rid of ringing in the ears, for example, high heart rate, where people are getting very tachycardic and all day long, even at night when they sleep. We've also had some good success in people with a condition called LP little a. This is a specific kind of high cholesterol that doesn't matter how good your diet is, how good your sleep and nutrition exercise is, you just can't reduce it, even with statins. And so we've been able to keep LP little a levels at bay as well with this procedure.
Excellent. Yeah, I know a few people who have been dealing with this. They try to do everything and they actually succeed. They do everything that's possible. And then they get their lab results like, nothing changed. Yeah. And I'm so excited about this. All the longevity research, it's advancing so rapidly. And these therapies and interventions that we now have available. So let's talk about the plasma exchange is one thing. I am really also enamored with the possibility of exosomes. So let's say I do the plasma exchange with you. Is right after a good time, for example, to start working with exosome therapy?
Not only is it a good time, it's the best time to do it. And so immediately after plasma exchange, what I do personally, what a lot of our patients do, is they do a IV infusion of stem cells and exosomes. And for your audience at benefit, stem cells, I think everyone knows these are cells that are able to find areas in your body with inflammation and activate the natural healing process of those areas inside of your body. And then exosomes are the signaling molecules that are used by those stem cells to elicit these positive effects. And so people that get stem cell therapy, exosome therapy, can really reduce the amount of inflammation that they have going on and actually physically heal areas that are damaged on the inside of their biology. And by doing it after plasma exchange, what you're doing is setting up the conditions for the most amount of success with these products. The reason being is that when you remove this plasma, you are removing a ton of inflammation with the plasma. All of those antibodies and immune complexes and cytokines that lead to inflammation. So when you put the stem cells and exosomes in, they have a much easier time finding the signaling of areas that are actually still inflamed and can more easily find their target tissue.
And that makes total sense, Darshan. And it's also true. Let's say you have high systemic inflammation and you get an exosome IV, the exosomes actually first take care of this inflammation versus going, let's say you have something else that you really want healed. But so the first step would be, so the exosomes actually first tackle the inflammation. Is that correct?
Right. They're signaling molecules that signal your stem cells and your natural healing cells to become more active. But rather than having them signaled everywhere in your body, if you do it after plasma exchange, those signaling molecules have an easier time finding areas that actually need real healing.
And I'm curious, what specific areas of health do you see benefiting most from exosome-based therapies?
Oh, there's a lot. And unfortunately, the FDA says we can't really specify that exosomes treat any condition. But what I can tell you is that exosomes are very beneficial in any disease processes that have a root cause in inflammation. Okay. So, and that's pretty much almost all disease causes have a root in inflammation. And so I think if you think of it that way, it can give you a good idea of what you would potentially use exosomes as a target for.
Yeah, and it's navigating the regulatory landscape is always a bit dicey, closer to translating exosome research into viable therapies. What regulatory considerations and challenges do you anticipate? And how can researchers and clinicians and policymakers work together to ensure that these really vital therapies and that they're safe and effective? What can be done?
Sadly to say is that the regulatory industry in the United States is highly influenced by the pharmaceutical industry, And when the pharmaceutical industry sees therapies like stem cells, exosomes, gene therapies, peptides coming down the pathway, it makes their pharmaceuticals very ineffective, right? Unneeded. And so if there's not any profits that can be made from their traditional chemical pharmaceuticals, that they highly encourage the FDA to slow down the discovery aspect of therapies like stem cells, et cetera. And so we have a massive problem in the United States of this system that was initially developed to protect humans, right? To protect us, right? The FDA is great. You can't just put a chemical together and put it on shelves and say that this is effective and it kill you, right? And so it was effective for a very long time, but what's happened now is that it is very much slowing down the regulatory framework or even completely eliminating a regulatory framework under which these therapies can exist, sadly. And so I think what's going to happen is we'll still push forward, of course, right? However, I think a lot of these therapies are going to be done in other countries where they have more innovation in medicine is encouraged versus discouraged because of some other corporate incentives.
And I also think, and I'm hopeful that as with other medicines, I'm talking about sacred plant medicines right now, when a particular subset of society, let's talk about veterans here, who are some of the people who suffer most, especially, let's talk, you know, whether it's trauma, stress, anxiety, and everything is tried and nothing works. And they have access in other countries to therapies that include healing modalities with sacred plant medicines. I'm just thinking about Iboga. So now you actually have a push. People have become aware also when these individuals who are seen as heroes who have served and put their lives on the line for the country, when they experience benefits where nothing else worked, that's when a society often starts listening up. That's a lot of times when policymakers start listening up, because then there's also credibility or their livelihoods on the line in the next election cycle. So I'm hopeful that will also translate into these types of therapies.
That's a good that's a good way to potentially address the problem, is by using that route through our policymakers. But definitely, I think veterans can definitely benefit from stem cell and exosome therapy as well, of course. And so why would we not be offering this? It's so much cheaper than waiting for them to get sick and now needing things like coronary bypass surgery and cancer removal surgery, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. So even if you're not in it for the heart-centered reasons, but if you're thinking about money alone, the economics of it, and the economics of somebody who is just getting worse and worse over years and decades, and what that costs the healthcare system, what that costs a society, because an individual is not in a state where they can function optimally, right? Their entire lives and their family's lives revolves around managing this progressive state of unwellness. So it just makes sense. Given your multidisciplinary approach at Next Health, how do you actually envision personalized health optimization evolving with what we're seeing right now, the advent of AI and machine learning technologies in predictive medicine?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I'm working very heavily in this right now because, like you said, I have the benefit of being having my foot in multiple countries in medicine at the same time. I have trained in traditional Western medicine, disease care, also trained in functional medicine and root cause medicine. I have a lot of knowledge about longevity sciences and what's going on in that whole field. And then also the basics. Like, I also became a personal trainer and a nutritionist throughout my years of study as well. And I see all of these different verticals are so separated in their thoughts and their conferences and their textbooks and all of it, you know, their educational process, all of it, that I look at AI as a unifying central meeting place for all of these thought processes. So what AI can do is take the best of the best knowledge and research in each of these fields, put them together into one thought process, one base of knowledge, and by looking at the entire individual, personalize a care program utilizing a prioritized set of recommendations on, number one, what's going to save this person's life? Number two, what's going to help this person improve their health span? Number three, what's going to help this person feel incredible, have no brain fog, feel vital, feel energetic, feel like they like what they see in the mirror? And then number four, how are we going to add years to this person's life by improving their longevity? And I feel like AI is going to be finally able to tie all this together because it has access to all of the information.
Yes, absolutely. I think we're going to see incredible things come forth from that. With the longevity research advancing so rapidly, is there anything, and especially you being active in different countries, meeting with so many people in the field, are there any emerging therapies or interventions that you are super excited about right now that are not yet known to the general public?
Yeah. So I think something that that everyone, once you hear it, it almost sounds like science fiction, but it is true. So are you familiar with the Yamanaka factors?
Yes. And please go into more detail.
Okay. So a couple of decades ago, Japanese scientist Yamanaka discovered four factors that could turn any cell. We could take a skin cell, a mucosal cell, anything, and turn it into a pluripotential stem cell, which is basically a cell that can turn into any other organ, one of our original cells. So think about that. We have the ability of every cell being able to create every other cell in our body, but not just create every other cell in our body, a brand new young version of that cell. Okay. So right now, this has been done in laboratories. We have been able to turn in a petri dish a skin cell, for example, into a pluripotential cell, and then turn that cell into a neuron, turn that cell into a cardiac muscle cell, et cetera, with four factors that were discovered by Dr. Yamanaka. Now the research is going down the pathway as, okay, what if we don't want a skin cell to go completely back to a pluripotential cell? We just want to stop the process and where it just becomes a young skin cell. Mm-hmm. So now you can apply certain factors or certain dosages to control that process to just turn, to re-age a cell back into a younger version of itself. If you can really get this right, control that process and have the delivery mechanism to deliver it to every cell in your body or a specific cell, say you have a heart attack and you need to have your heart function again, like a young heart to the heart cells, for example. People with Alzheimer's turn their neurons back into young brain cells, et cetera. Once we can figure this out, we literally have unlocked longevity, right? If you think about it, we've totally unlocked potential lifespan extension for way beyond 150 years. If you really look at cells, it's easy to get philosophical about life, right? Because life and death has been such a part of human existence since the first humans, of course, and is part of just nature, right? It's part of everything lives and dies. But if you really look at it on a cellular basis, it's really a mechanical issue at the inside of a cell. It's a mechanical chemical issue. And now we've discovered some of the keys in how to reverse this process, not just stop it, but reverse it. Once you have that key, the potential is endless. And so some of this research is being done by Stanford, by very bright scientists there. It's being done at Harvard. It's also being done all over the world. This will happen during our lifetimes. It's just mind-blowing to think that. But this is during our lifetimes.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm right there with you, Darshan. I had the pleasure of having a conversation with Dr. David Sinclair a little while ago. And then when he was sharing, this was back when they just had successfully concluded an experiment, a study with mice, where they took old mice who, due to age, they couldn't see anymore. And they chose the eye because they could have applied this to any organ, but the eye, either you don't. And they basically reversed the age of the eyes. And I don't They've already finished this now. They wanted to reverse the age of an entire mouse, and they also wanted to apply what they did in the mouse model with human eyes. And they had turned cells, single cells of 80 plus year olds back into the age of a 20 biological age of a 20 year old cell. So the ramifications of this are incredible. Once that's out, once people have access to this, and once the general populace has access to this, we can stay healthy, radiantly healthy, functional, feeling good, being productive for into our hundreds potentially. And I've mentioned it before, it will change the way we live individually and also as societies. And I personally, I'm an eternal optimist. I think it's going to be fantastic and help facilitate humanity 2.0. Once you take away a lot of the fear a lot of the stress that puts people in fight or flight all of the time when they know, okay, my health is pretty much taken care of. I can have a long and full life. I can raise my great-grandchildren. How wonderful, if I so desire, right? It's pretty incredible. When you look at, so the one side is the human aspect. I know quite a few in the audience are also in health and wellness as far as business goes as well. And if you look at the intersection of health and technology, we've talked about a little bit, it spawned numerous startups. And for you, Darshan, as both a medical professional and entrepreneur, what do you believe, and a very successful entrepreneur at that, what do you believe are critical factors for success in this space?
I think with anything, you have to go to where the puck is going, right? And you have to really, more than ever now, you have to keep up with the science. You have to be able to educate yourself on a consistent basis, almost daily, on what is coming out and what is the research showing, and have conversations around this, because the things we're doing today will be irrelevant in 5 years because there's going to be so much better out there. And so when it takes 5 years to develop a company, so if you spend 5 years making a company and now your product is irrelevant, you've wasted some time, right? And so really being able to see where everything's going and anticipate and play in that field, I think is going to be very relevant for the entrepreneurs in this space. For me in NextHealth, I look at NextHealth as a platform where we have a customer base already coming to us that trusts us because it is a medical business and we're held to a very high standard for what we offer, because every individual that is there is under a medical license. And so we are bound by that license, number one, not to do harm, and number two, just so efficacy and safety. And by creating a platform where these technologies can come out and be available to the public is where we're putting all our efforts and all of our resources, actually. And so I think there's different ways of looking at it, is try to be on the forefront of what's happening. There's a lot of people doing some incredible things, but they need a lot of support around them and a lot of industry around them. For example, with AI, you need the chips. And so looking and making the chips is one way of how you participate in that AI industry. The health and wellness industry is very similar. And for us, it's really about creating that platform and that place where people can go to experience this as well. Because I know you, just like me, we probably listen to a lot of podcasts. First thing you think is, how can I get that? And you start Googling around and you're like, there's nowhere. I don't know where to go. And so NextHealth is going to be that place where you can come and experience these technologies as soon as they're available.
Yes, and it's also a beautiful space. You create such beautiful environments where environments really also matter for healing. You've really taken care of every little detail. And something else that I really love, as I've experienced it in a few of your different locations, is you have a lovely team. Everything seems really cohesive. Everything is it just feels right. Would you mind sharing some of your experience and also your practices with regard to team building, especially in enterprise and in a wellness empire, as you have built and are still building out, requires a really great team. So what are some of your insights, and what is something that you've learned about this that you could share with us?
Yes, I think the number one thing to remember when you're in wellness is that people are working at your business not because they need a job. They're working at your business because they're inspired by what you're doing. And either they want to do it themselves, or they're inspired about the direction that is going in. They want to be a part of it. So you have to make them part of it. And we do that by constantly educating them, providing them with the services that we are looking at bringing in, providing them with the knowledge that they need to intelligently talk about it, but also apply it to their own life and their family's life as well. And for example, we do monthly all-hand meetings where every meeting we go over something new that we're looking at, what's going on in the space, what is something that people should be aware of. And it doesn't matter what your knowledge level is, you can always learn something at these type of meetings. And so they feel part of the big picture, and they also feel like they have the knowledge to actually be there. They feel like they're part of the team because they're not removed to just doing, for example, just sitting at the front desk. Even our front desk employees learn all the same stuff that our nurses do, for example. And so it's a lot of team building and inspiration in that way.
Outstanding. Yeah, that is really crucial. And You've also built a really great community, whether it's via the information you put out, podcasts, whether it's via events maybe I'm out of the loop. I'd love to know. I have attended some of the really lovely events where you bring some of the leading voices in health, wellness, biohacking. I was there at a book signing with Ben Greenfield and other people. So is this still something you're doing?
As a matter of fact, because of COVID, we had to stop doing that for a little while, and we're bringing it back. And we're going to bring it back both live and on Zoom internet for a wider audience as we expand beyond just the borders of our country. We want to be able to bring all this information out to a much wider audience. So yes, to answer your question, we're bringing back, we call that our Next Health Forefront series. And it's really about staying on the forefront of everything happening in the longevity industry. And stay tuned. We're actually launching it next month. I'll send you an invitation.
Excellent. I can't wait. I enjoyed it so much for the years prior to COVID. And not only learning, like yourself, learning for me is truly one of the greatest pleasures of life. I just love it so much. That's also why I love doing this podcast so much. I get to talk to incredible people such as yourself and just learn from them. It's the best. It gives me all the dopamine kicks that I need. And also the community aspect. Some of the nicest, best, most interesting people in health and wellness would come together and gather at your event. So I miss that. I look forward to it. That's excellent. Also, I'd love to know from you, Darshan, how has your personal philosophy on health and wellness evolved over your career and over the many years you've been doing this? And how has it influenced the mission and practices at Next Health?
I think that what I've really learned over the last 10 years, first, I was very sick and I got myself healthy. And then I maintained that level of health for a very long time and with ups and downs like everybody has, but consistently just turning around my biological age year after year and tracking that number. And what I really believe moves the needle more than anything is to become what I call a habit-forming ninja, to be able to form habits as quickly and maintain those habits as consistently as possible for the longest period of time. And this is what I think is almost more important than focusing on are blueberries better than strawberries, is learning how to become an excellent habit former. So what you do day to day really affects your life. There's very few things out there that you can do a one-time treatment or once a month or even once every year that's going to move the needle for you on a long-term basis. So I would say that's what's really influenced me. And so one of the reasons I even started Next Health was because it was hard for me to do things like cold therapy, heat therapy, infrared therapy, and hyperbaric oxygen therapy all in the same day. Like I'd have to do one day and then another day, and it took a lot of time and energy. And so at Next Health, you can literally come in and in 2 hours do all of it, and including an IV drip as well. And so I think that adding those weekly routines and rituals to your life, I think, make the biggest difference.
Yes. And for absolutely a routine, a practice that you have that's just part of your life. And for people who may not have the access to places like Next Health, what can you share with them? What would really make a difference in their life? A habit that they may just be able to do wherever they are, wherever they're listening, and integrate into their lives?
Yeah, I would say if you have some time in the morning, put together a nice morning routine for yourself. This morning routine should include things like do not check your phone the first thing as you wake up. Put your phone, I put my phone in the bathroom, it gets charged in the bathroom. And so that way I have to physically get up and walk over there. And then you're in the bathroom, so you have to brush your teeth and do all your other stuff. And before you know it, 10, 15 minutes has gone by before you've checked your phone. And that is a massive change in most people's lives now. It's crazy. How many people, I would say 99% of people pick up their phone first thing in the morning, and it immediately sets them off into a state of fight or flight. Secondly, add to that morning routine one thing, maybe even every month. Maybe it is a little workout. Maybe it's a prayer, a meditation. Maybe it's a protein shake. Add one little thing and build upon that morning routine. It doesn't need to be something massive or major. One thing that I do every morning is I get up and I walk outside as well with my cup of coffee, getting that light from natural sources into your eyes, being outside, being grounded, having your bare feet touch the bare earth, all of that makes a massive difference.
Absolutely. And also, I love for conscious breathing exercises. It's called the breath of life for a reason. Most of us, we run through our day-to-days. We don't breathe deeply. The way we breathe even, and it basically tells our nervous system, something must be wrong. So we're in this stressed state that we can easily just calm down by breathing. So all of these things that you've mentioned, they're available for free. And once we make them a habit, we don't even notice anymore. We don't need to tell ourselves to do them. It makes a huge difference. Lastly, Darshan, I would love to know from you, what's the best way to connect with you for our audience? Where can they find you? Can they find any of your offerings? Next Health, of course, is next.com. I'll make sure to put all of this also in the show notes. But are there any other ways of communicating with you or reaching out, any platforms you're active on?
Yeah, so I'm active on Instagram. It's at Darshan Shah MD. So that's the same handle I have on YouTube, same handle I have on LinkedIn, etc. And then if you go to my website, drshah.com, we do have a newsletter where we will be sending monthly kind of tidbits from me and videos and things like that, links to podcasts that I do, and also next-health.com if you're interested in looking at any of our treatments that we have there as well.
Excellent. Darshan, what a pleasure to talk with you. And I really sharing this passion for extending lifespan and health span. I've really been looking forward to it. And I hope we can do also a deeper dive into particular subjects in a follow-up conversation. Today, we got a great overview. And I know there's so much more to talk about.
There is. There definitely is. Let's do something again soon.
I look forward to it. Thank you for coming on the show. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you, Ariana. I really appreciate it.
Hey everyone, if you're as passionate about transforming your life and reaching your peak performance as I am, I invite you to join my newsletter. Think of it as your weekly dose of inspiration and knowledge to supercharge your journey to becoming superhuman. Start optimizing mentally, physically, and spiritually today. Just head over to superhumanize.com/newsletter and sign up. Trust me, your future self will thank you.